is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
War with China, kinetic war with China in 2025. That is information provided by a number of sources now, importantly by the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal, confirming that a significant leader in the Pentagon, a man in charge of Air Mobile Command, which means the refueling operations necessary to fight a kinetic war, has said that in 2025 is credible. Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, my colleague and co-host, and we're joined by Steve Yates, who is the very careful informant of the thinking in Taiwan we've spoken to for many years. Steve is now at the America's First Policy Initiative to comment on all matters of Asia, but I want to be very specific. Steve, you've read this as we all have, and you've seen it confirmed, not denied by the Pentagon, that it happened, a document that was not meant to be public, I believe. Is it credible to you that in 2025 we will be in kinetic war with China? Good evening to you.
Well, good evening, John. I think first, by way of context, over the arc of my career, I have heard timelines and arguments that have consistently popped up. What the key, clear trend line is they used to say that China needed time to modernize or develop and that they were behind, and it would take 10 to 15 years, and it became 5 to 10 years. What's happening is a clear pattern of these timelines shortening. The other caveat is no one under God's creation can know whether or when a Chinese leader or the military will move. It could happen today. It could happen 10 years from now. It could happen in between or never. And so we have these exercises among Pentagon thinkers and interagency groups and academics. They'll talk about it. What I think is legitimate is that something is different in China under Xi Jinping's rule. China has modernized. We did that, as the famous stickers about President Joe Biden say. We gave them trillions of dollars. We gave them access to privileged technology, and they have developed capabilities that are quite destructive. This timeline of in 2025 seems to skip past the election cycle in Taiwan and the election cycle in the United States. I'm actually kind of concerned that China under Xi, with internal problems escalating, might actually want to move more dramatically sooner than 2025. So I think it's important that deterrence begin yesterday to strengthen among our allies in East Asia.
Gordon, you have a question for Steve.
Steve, what would you do to strengthen deterrence?
Well, some of the things are underway in a healthy fashion, but could have started earlier and gone further. One is for what's happening in Japan with the commitment to increase its defense capabilities, speaking a little bit more openly what its own national interests are, rather than playing junior partner role with the United States. I think that's normal and commendable, not any kind of a challenge to the alliance. It strengthens the alliance. We hear some murmurings from South Korea, which has not engaged this subject matter as clearly since changing diplomatic relations from Taipei to Beijing a couple decades ago. It's now making more indications to say a crisis in Taiwan Strait. It's bad for its economy, bad for its national interests. There have been commitments to accelerate arms sales processes in the Congress and within the administration. These are net positive. The issue, though, I think, is presidential leadership as a commander in chief. The profound negative of NATO being seen as failing to deter Russia, I think, opens questions about whether Europe, NATO, and other allies are really prepared and would be effective in supporting deterrence against China.
You mentioned South Korea. The Secretary General of NATO meeting with President Yoon, speaking of nuclear threat by North Korea, but also speaking of NATO in East Asia. Is that a factor in this calculation out of Beijing or out of Washington? South Korea getting in the mix.
Well, I think it is a net positive, and I think it's also positive to get NATO and broader European leaders speaking about this challenge so that there's some planning in advance to indicate what role they would play. Would they be active supporters of financial and other measures the way they were vis-a-vis Russia and its invasion of Ukraine, and apply the same methodology and intent towards China in an East Asia context? Would they provide material assistance? There's some question of depletion of capabilities in the Ukraine conflict and what is left to bring to bear in a faraway locality. All of these things, I think it's helpful to have talked about a little bit more out in the open to disabuse Beijing from thinking this is just Beijing versus Washington.
Gordon, you have a question.
Steve, we have heard rumors that the new Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, plans to go to Taiwan sometime this year. And apparently there's been some planning in the Pentagon to arrange that. Your thoughts, does that accelerate China's timeline? Does it put China's timeline back? What effect do you think that has on Beijing?
Well, number one, I think that it is a good thing and commendable for Speaker McCarthy to have promised to do this as part of his campaign to be Speaker, and then to be speaking as though he will deliver on that promise. I think it is important to establish the principle that our leaders will go where they need to go, when they need to go, and engage whomever they choose based on the interests of the United States and not some kind of a political campaign or military campaign by Beijing. And when Speaker Pelosi was visiting, we talked about it at that time. I thought it was a mistake for her to wait until the twilight of her tenure as Speaker. If she cared about these issues, she should have gone earlier in her tenure and maybe more consistently. So I think that is good and appropriate. I think it helps focus the region. He should, and I believe will, stop in Tokyo, perhaps Seoul as well. And I think that that is a net positive. The main question, though, it will lay bare, just like Speaker Pelosi's visit, is where is the White House? And that is what Beijing will watch very, very closely. And if there is a disconnect in the strategic messaging, and if there's any kind of back and forth like they had between the White House and the Speaker when Pelosi visited, that would be very unfortunate. That would give Beijing, I think, added incentive to continue to push ahead.
The business plan is in doubt. The economy is sagging. COVID zero catastrophe. In addition, the neighborhood is rallying in defense of Taiwan and the South China Sea. Not a good time to go to war. Is that a consideration in Beijing, or is this ideology only?
I think it's driven primarily by ideology, and they do have an information bubble. There's a profound disincentive to bring bad news to the top leader. We have our own rationality that I think is accurate and important. They don't operate the same way. And so I think we have to live every day in accepting that we can't know what the basis of their decisions making is going to be. They have this intent. They have the capability to do great harm. And it's really up to us to make it harder and perhaps more confusing for them to see a signal for them to have an opportunity to proceed.
1 minute, Gordon. Quick question.
It's not only a question of Xi Jinping deciding to go to war, it's also the accident, because they are triggering these intercepts in the global commons. Your comments?
Well, that has accelerated. I mean, even just in recent days, there's been a number that if I had seen that number in the 1990s, I would have been very, very alarmed. It has now become sadly commonplace. And so we have to watch that with great concern. There's always the risk of some kind of an accident or small event snowballing into a broader conflict. And we need to do everything possible to avoid that.
Chair of the America's First Policy Institute's New China Policy Initiative, Steve Yates, Gordon Chang, I'm John Batchelor.
Unlike other health concerns, mental illness is not always easy to see. Depression won't show up on an eye chart, and you can't measure it on your bathroom scale. Sorting out a mental health concern is not something to attempt on your own. You won't find a bipolar disorder by looking at a thermometer. Like many other health conditions, help for mental illness takes professional diagnosis and treatment. Anxiety won't just go away under a stick-on bandage. So the sooner you seek treatment, the better. If you or a loved one has a mental health concern, don't go it alone. find out what to do. For 24-hour free and confidential information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP. Learn more at samhsa.gov/support. That's samhsa.gov/support.